by the powers vested in me by the Federal Communications Commission, I command you to get on the microphone in a serious manner and continue this broadcast.
You are listening to the Massive Report Podcast, your complete source of information, news, and analysis of your awesome town crew.
For the lead!
Are you kidding me?
I felt like Eminem. I was like, I'm not getting any snare in my headphones right at the beginning of this thing. I need more snare in my headphones. And then I realized Larry unplugs me.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, it's okay. It's the Massive Report. What's going on, everybody? Joined Larry Johnson, Sam Fahmy, turning the pentiometers and potentiometers. What are they called? Something like that. I don't know. I was in radio. Knobs. Chris Lamacchia, Justin Bell, Jim Bach on the show a little bit later. Cast of thousands tonight. And Chris Edwards live via Skype from Perth, Australia. What's up, man? How you doing?
I'm going well. How are you guys?
I'm doing well. It's very early there, isn't it?
It is. It's nearly 8 o'clock in the morning.
Jeez. I don't wake up at that for anything.
That's convenient because it's nearly 8 o'clock in the evening here.
Yeah, it is. It is.
It is.
That's actually the one thing I like about the fact that Chris lives in Perth and not anywhere else in Australia is because it's really easy to figure out what time it is.
Right.
I just add 12.
But the thing is, yeah, he's in the future.
Yeah, he's in the future.
Yeah.
Which kind of freaks me out.
It's a little bit creepy, yeah. It's that stupid metric.
Do you guys have flying cars yet, Chris?
Not yet. They're in about 20 minutes.
They have cars that hop around like kangaroos.
That's amazing.
Yeah. I do have some breaking news, though. I do have some breaking news. Tahiti have scored more goals this month than Barcelona.
You heard it here first, folks.
Right.
You heard it here
first.
That's
right.
That's the kind of insight you can expect from the Massive Report podcast.
It's you know, honestly, here's the thing. I want to talk about this real quick. ABC 6. The TV station in Columbus literally showed up like
10
minutes ago, something along those lines, and spiked the curb a couple of times. I'm not going to call the guy out that did it, but whoever was driving their van totally spiked the curb. And we're all sitting here, and we're eating pizza before this thing happened. By the way, thank you very much to Hendox for giving us some free pizza and a couple of free drinks tonight. Hendox, come down here every single Monday night, 7 o'clock. $2 beers, Willie's awesome, and you should definitely check it out, corner of Maynard and High, now that we've got the sponsor plug out of the way. They come down, and we're all just sitting out there looking out the window like, why is the news here? It wasn't for us. I was a little
disappointed.
You
got a little excited, though.
I did. I thought we were going to put your face on camera.
I thought it was your face.
No, you're way prettier than me.
There was some
No, it's so I thought that was interesting. But let's talk some soccer, because I guess that's what we do here. I don't know. That's what I've been told.
Crickets. I'm going to add crickets.
We're going to talk. You know, no, I like that. That's a good idea. You should totally talk or add that up in post. So what the hell happened this weekend, and why haven't we seen more of that? 2-0 against Montreal. A couple of one which I thought was a solid takeaway and a solid goal, and one kind of
we'll call it a fluke.
Eric Gehrig style deflection from in the Philadelphia game, but it went in our favor this time, and so 2-0 is the end result there. I'm going to open it up to the floor, guys. What happened? Why did we win this game? And how can we continue this trend?
Well, you know what's funny is I found myself making excuses for Montreal. Like, why is...
You're not alone.
You know, why... Okay, Montreal's losing this game because they had 2 weeks off and they're rusty and they're sluggish. And or it's the Major League Soccer scheduling through, you know, the international sort of break.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why the schedule is Swiss cheese. There was only, what, was there five games?
Yeah.
Over the weekend, like that, yeah. And then there's like five more on Wednesday. It gets really weird.
It does.
And it's going to get weirder next year, too.
Oh, God.
The World Cup. But, you know, in Major League Soccer, you have to win these type of games.
Yeah.
And for the Crew to beat a team of Montreal's, you know, level or quality, you know, you can't take away from that. There's no excuses for that because these type of games happen.
Yeah.
You have to win them. The fact is the Crew haven't beat a team that good since last summer, since Sporty mm-hmm. Kansas City. I mean, it's a good victory, and they look good doing it. They maintain possession for the first time all year in defense, like defensive possession, able to withstand all the attacks that Montreal had. I mean, they just beat them.
Yeah.
You know, whether they were tired or sluggish or whatever, they beat them.
Yeah, and that's rare this year.
For the last 2 years.
Yeah, no, it is. It is. That's fair. That's definitely fair. I was sitting there. My tweet after the first goal was, "Is this real life?" Mm-hmm. Because I really wasn't 100% sure, and it was just it progressively went down and down the rabbit hole and just got more weird throughout the entire game in a good way.
Yeah. Well, you don't see a lot of teams dominate another team like the Crew did. I mean, it wasn't a pure domination because the deflection goal and stuff like that. But when it got to the second half, the Crew were playing really good soccer for being 2-0 up. You know, not just bunkering and stuff like that. It was surprising. Yeah, you don't see a lot of Major League Soccer teams doing that. And that was really nice to see.
Everything kind of fell into place on Saturday, and you would have liked to have seen that maybe in April.
Well, the question is why did it fall into place, I guess.
And that's the biggest thing. Chris, what do you think?
Me?
Or
Aussie Chris?
We'll talk to you first, and then we'll talk to Aussie Chris.
Take that, buddy. No, I think that it's a fact that... This is going to be kind of controversial, but whatever, I don't care. The players finally said, screw it, we're going to go out and win a game. Robert started some guys, started all the healthy guys, and I really, really, really want to believe that Chad and Danny and Josh Williams and Andy and the veterans on the team, Federico, got together and said, you know what, screw it, we're winning this game. It doesn't matter what happens, we're winning this game. We're going to play smart, organized, good soccer. We're not going to do anything stupid. We're not going to, you know, make the dumb mistakes that we make in the back by pushing our wing backs forward. We're not going to do any of those things. We're actually going to play soccer the right way, and we're going to go out and win a game. And I think that they won simply out of pure brute mental force. They decided they were going to do it, and they did it.
So you thought that they won despite Robert instead of because of Robert?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. No, that's fair.
I think, I mean, you can look at it that way because they haven't been doing it. No. And there was definitely a different mentality after they took the lead because they've mm-hmm. been able to come out aggressive in the past few games and sort of fall apart or not stay mentally focused.
Right.
Yeah. But I think a lot of that has to do with Josh Williams and Chad Marshall.
Mm-hmm.
And Danny O'Rourke, you know, Federico Higuain is, I'm sure, is a great captain, but sometimes you have sort of field, like, generals.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, where they're out there, and that's a security blanket for some of the other players, especially like a Chad Marson.
Right. Yeah.
Or even a Tyson Wall, who is his first year.
Right.
You know, you see those veteran guys who have been playing at Crew Stadium for a few years, and that gives them confidence.
Yeah, you could just tell there was an attitude, you know, and there's no better point to look at to see that there was a screw you guys, we're winning this game attitude on the team other than when Daniel Rourke got in Marco DeVaio's face and said, I don't know what he said, but it wasn't very friendly and it was very, very pointed.
Yeah.
And then you look at Robert Warzee, and Robert Warzee did the same things. He waited too long to make subs. You could make the argument that he subbed the wrong guys at the wrong times. Robert Warzee coached a normal Robert Warzee game, but the team won anyway.
It seemed almost like the team got their balls back this week.
Exactly.
I mean, really, at the end of the day,
mm-hmm.
it really seemed like there was some more grit and some more teeth to the team. And I would love to see that continue. And I know Justin's got something he wants to talk about that. That's a third segment topic.
I was going to say something.
Go ahead. Yeah, no, of course.
The only difference I saw between the way this team played in this game
and
the way that they've played in several other matches is the fact that they had two goals that went in the net.
Yeah.
That's it. I mean,
And that's exactly what Robert said.
Yeah, I think he's right. Honest to God, I think he's right.
God,
I think
I hate
that
you sometimes.
They played their game. They played the kind of style that they've been playing, but they had two balls that found the back of the net.
Well,
and that's it. I mean, you have we had so many chances, so many shots that have been taken on net that should have been goals, but they were stopped or they were just off by, you know, they bounced off a post, they did these things. There was really no difference. The only difference that I saw in terms of the way that the game went was the fact that finally Josh Williams is playing center back and Glauber is not on the field. I think that's the major difference that's the major difference.
I don't know if you should do that. Josh Williams is listening.
This is something that since the second preseason match, I said this Glauber guy is just not, he's not a $250,000 player.
Yeah.
He just isn't.
He doesn't play like he's all in.
Yeah, $263,333.33. I think that's his guaranteed salary for this year. And that is crazy. Yeah. And I tell you, the fact that we saw such a difference in the way that the defense played in this match compared to against the best team in the league, in my opinion.
Yeah.
In the Eastern Conference, I should say. That major change in the fact that Williams is playing in the position that he should have been playing all along, and Glauber's out, I think that's the only thing that we can really point to in the way that the team play.
I'm gonna make this point, and then I'm gonna go to Chris Edwards on this. Just to your point, the Crew right now fifth in shots on goal in MLS, 12th in goals.
Exactly.
That's a huge disparity, and you don't see a lot of that as far as that goes. Chris. Chris Edwards, I want to go to you and get your thoughts on the Montreal match. What did you think?
Well, look, I agree with everything that's been said so far. The players are playing better than the coach is coaching them. The substitutions are being late and they're being made wrong. For the players, this is now an audition for whoever comes in to replace Warzea. Yeah. This is what it is. And I think that Warzea clearly doesn't have the brains to work that out. He is now a week-to-week proposition or a game-to-game proposition. So the next time he slips up, and I say that as a when as opposed to an if, the players are now preparing themselves for the next coach to come in so they can say, this is what I have to show you, so they can show what they have on offer. That's my pitch on it.
Now here's
from my point of view, as someone who is currently coaching a football manager team of the Columbus Crew, who has taken the Columbus Crew to a 2-0 win of the US Open Cup and has qualified for the semifinals of the playoffs with an 18-8-3 record. So that's 18
only
wins,
three losses.
Eight ties and three losses.
We should be hiring Chris as the next manager of the Crew.
The special one.
With a plus 28 goal difference.
Do you have it set on easy mode?
No, I've got it set properly.
Uh-huh.
Set properly. So, admittedly, it's taken me a few times. But, you know,
are you sure you're playing football
play
manager?
Seriously,
but
the point is that you've got to look after the players.
Yeah.
And you've got to give them, you've got to look after them properly and think about how the team operates. And quite frankly, Warzea has been operating it as his own little project and his own little fiefdom. And as a result, the players don't have the respect for him anymore. And HSG will soon work out that they have no respect for him either, and he'll be following Yallop out the door before too long.
Well, and here's my question for that, because I think you bring up a good point that I do think that there are probably some players that right now are playing as essentially an audition for whatever the next regime is that comes in. But looking back at our history, looking back at HSG's history with managers, how long does that last if HSG doesn't pull the trigger?
Well, that becomes an interesting one. Obviously, HSG tend to hire from within or with someone who has connections to the club. So the question is, do they go with their traditional mantra of those that know the club know best, or do they look for an outside hire? And that's the question that we need to ask. And while I've submitted an article for the new fanzine to come out late this week, early next week,
it's a good one, by the way.
Suitable hire. We have to wait and see on that one.
Yeah, no, most definitely. Well, we're gonna talk about this a little bit more. Talk a little bit more about the Montreal match, and then we'll get into the Cruz exit from the U.S. Open Cup. That's all coming up. It's going to be here in just a few minutes in segment two. This once again is the Massive Report live from Hendox. It's the Massive Report. I had to let that roll for a second. I'm sorry. I can't cut it off before it kicks in, Sam. It's just not allowed. You can clean that up in post, right?
That's exactly what I'm going to do.
Exactly. That sounds awesome.
Have you ever really considered what those words mean?
What's that?
I mean, there's some serious literature going on.
There is. There is.
I stopped an old man along the way. You really feel that he did.
You really do. Yeah. You really do. We should go out of this segment with Hold the Line. That's all I'm saying.
Oh.
I know. That's another classic of American songwriting. Is Toto from the U.S.? I have no idea.
Yes.
Are they? Okay, cool. Like Milwaukee?
No.
I can see Toto being from Milwaukee.
You know what I think?
I have no idea why, but I really could.
I could be wrong, but I think Toto was a band made up of like really good session musicians.
Yeah.
And they just kind of came together and formed a super smooth band.
That totally makes sense. That totally makes sense. Littery's up to... What
Isn't
are you up to?
A brand of toilet in Japan as well?
A Toto? That's a brand of toilet here. My toilet at home is a Toto.
My toilet at work is a Toto.
Yeah.
I've got a Mansfield.
You got a Mansfield? I'll tell you a very, very short story about my trip to England. When I was over there, there's a punk band from Chicago called Armitage Shanks. Apparently, that's the name of all the toilets in all the pubs in England. And I had no idea that that was what they were named after.
Wow.
Yeah.
Shanks.
Armitage Shanks. That's all I know. Do you guys have Armitage Shanks in Australia?
No.
Do your toilets flush the wrong way?
Yes.
Yeah, see?
They flush up, but not down.
Oh, wow.
So you've heard that joke before.
Problems. Yes. All right, so
yes,
so
we do have the Simpsons here.
So let's kind of wrap up our thoughts on the Montreal match. So the biggest thing with that is, let's figure out what was your key. What do you think, Larry? We'll start with you on that, Larry. Mm-hmm. What do you think was the biggest change? Was it Glauber not being in? What was it?
I think so. I think it's having Marshall and O'Rourke and Williams back in the lineup. Those guys, I mean, they just give a lot of confidence to the team.
Yeah.
And, you know, Williams proved it last year. He is a really good center back. And they got a little bit greedy putting him at right back.
Yeah.
They want to see goals from him. He can score some goals. He proved it on set pieces. He can score goals.
Yeah.
He's much more valuable at center back. Because Montreal, if Glauber was in that game, Montreal would have scored.
Yes.
I mean, I don't know how many times.
Six. Yeah, but,
but, I mean, they were bringing... Montreal was very patient. And if you had a center back like Glauber or a weaker center back, they would have gotten a goal or two. And so he was a difference. That's the takeaway from this game. I think that they'll use him again at center back next game.
Yeah.
That's sort of the way Robert Warzia works. But as soon as they see some sort of deterioration in results, they'll move him back to right back.
Chris Edwards, what was your X factor for this match?
No globber. Pretty much. No globber. Uh-huh. It changes the, Larry said, it changes the way that Montreal set up.
Yeah.
So they're expecting one particular layout setup. The defense has to change without globber in it, and we've put the spiritual leaders of the team on the field all at once.
Yeah.
You've got Chad Marshall, you've got Gavin, you've got O'Rourke all on the field. They're the spiritual leaders of the team all on the field at the same time, which is exactly what the team needs. And we succeeded from there. That's why we went and won 2-0.
Cool.
I think you meant to that's say Danny because Gavin's out.
Yeah, you meant to say Danny.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, that guy.
I get them confused you know all the time, too. It's fine.
Yeah.
So, Justin, Chris, any different X Factor for this match, or is it Globber?
No, I'm going to say it's Matias Sanchez.
Okay.
The no Globber thing definitely helped, but the no Globber thing helped in stopping Montreal from scoring, but I think that we don't score two goals without Matias Sanchez. Matias Sanchez is the link in the middle that this team has been missing.
That's a really good point. He had a really good game.
He had a very good game. And I realized that everybody's going to say, well, yeah, but he sucked the first two games he was in. Well, yes, those were the first two games. That was in the past.
Yeah.
He's found his stride. He's adapted to the game, the system, the players around him, whatever. And he's going to be good. He's going to be the Matias Sanchez that we all watched for half an hour on YouTube back in December.
Who's, or whenever that was. Here's my other question for you guys. And we'll just do a quick fire on this because I definitely want to get to the Chicago match. But
why?
The past Chicago match. We'll talk about the next Chicago match coming up in just a second.
Yeah,
but because we have a few minutes to kill, and it's apparently important, and okay. Steve Abreu will bitch at me if we don't talk about it. But
why do we listen to him?
So, Arrieta. Does Arrieta start in the next Chicago match?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Knowing our coach, does Arrieta start in the next
Chicago
match?
Absolutely not.
That's not what I'm talking about. I'm not saying does he deserve to start, because I believe
I know exactly the question
he deserves
you're asking.
To start. Does he start? Do you think?
No, he doesn't, because he hasn't been in practice to be responsible and professional for the past, 3 weeks?
Yeah.
And so it doesn't matter if he went to Costa Rica and played for their national team and proved that he is one of the best 18 soccer players from the country of Costa Rica. None of that matters. He hasn't been doing that for the Columbus Crew. Therefore, Robert Warzea thinks he's not a responsible slash good slash professional soccer player, and his performance as of late is not as good as Dominic Aduro's. Therefore, Arrieta is the third guy off of the bench in the Chicago game, and Dominic Aduro continues his start.
Does Schoenfeld get subbed in before Arrieta?
No. I think you're going about this all wrong. Does Conrad get subbed in before Arrieta?
He has
been
scoring.
Because because Schoenfeld and Arrieta are the same player in Robert's mind. They're both second forwards.
You're missing a very crucial point, though.
What's that?
That Ghana is a better soccer football country than Costa Rica.
I thought you were going to be serious for a minute.
Oh, God. I mean, that's...
It's true. I mean, Ghana is in Africa, which is a better footballing continent than North and Central America, which is where Costa Rica is. Therefore, by the transitive property of Robert Rozier logic...
Hey, he said it.
Who knocked the U.S. out of the World Cup the last time?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So, no, you're proving all of our points.
I'm just checking.
No, you're proving all of our points that doesn't matter if Arrieta scores a World Cup-winning goal against Spain.
Yeah.
He still sits on Robert Rozier's bench.
Hi.
I want to say one quick thing about the Montreal match before we move on. You know, I went back and watched the Philadelphia match.
Oh, God.
And,
why do you hate yourself?
I did, because I wanted to see what was the difference between what happened this past Saturday and what happened last Wednesday. And the major difference, you know, we've said it over and over again, it is the fact that Glauber wasn't on the field. But it's also the fact that the way that Glauber was being used,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to how Josh Marshall or Josh Williams was being used, what he's capable
of. Like, it's funny because
the teammate of Josh.
Wonder Twin Powers unite!
Yeah. what you saw in the Philadelphia match from the very outset was Philadelphia inviting the Crew to create set pieces in our scoring third.
Yeah.
They wanted them to. And you could almost see Zach McMath just kind of like licking his chops, waiting for Higuain to take a free kick or a corner, because they knew what they were going to do. He was going to outlet the ball to Cruz or Latou, and they were just going to go right at them because we had Glauber and I think who was at the was it Gehrig. The two center backs were pressing forward and they couldn't get back. They could not get back. So what happened was from like I think like third or fourth minute in, Philadelphia had two terrific counterattacks and you did not see Montreal was unable to do that same thing in this match.
Yeah.
And that's very key to how we won this match. Now the fact that it took so many matches for other teams to kind of capitalize on something that's very obvious. I mean, I'm still just blown away by the fact that we're paying Glauber $250,000. We're paying him $250,000 to be an offensive center back. That makes no sense. It's just nonsensical. And I know that everyone wants to blame Robert Warzea for the form, but that's not his call. He did not go out and find that player, and he is not paying that player.
No.
This is a decision that's made by the front office.
But, and I hate to do this, I'm going to use your own logic against you.
All right.
For once.
Go ahead and
try. Because Robert Warzea, whether he has Glauber or Josh Williams in the game, he uses them both as the same player and expects them to accomplish the same tasks.
That's fine.
No, it's not, because Glauber is not as athletic as Josh Williams, and Josh Williams is not as tall as Glauber is. So it doesn't matter who Robert Warzea has on the field, the 11 guys he has on the field, he expects them all to perform the way that he sees that position performing in his head. He expects Josh Williams to do the same tall things
well,
that
I'm gonna
Glauber
say
does.
He expects both of them to be Chad Marshall.
Yes, well, that's another good point. And
the other aspect of that, though, too, is are you going to let $250,000 player sit on your bench and,
no,
and play
no.
Josh
No,
Josh
but
Williams?
I'm going to...
Not in Columbus, Ohio.
You're not going to do it.
But yeah. I'm going to tell that $250,000 player to go out and play your game, and I'm not going to tell him to go out and play this wildly abstract center back game that I have constructed in my brain
but
as a Polish national team player.
But you have to think about it in these terms.
Was that for
that's
me?
The reason why
that
they.
Was for you.
Cool.
That's the reason why they have Higuain doing what he's doing.
Right.
They got these guys so that they said, Federico Higuain is a great set piece taker. So what do we need to do? And their logic, well, we need to go
get
out
set
and
pieces.
Get set pieces. We need to have two really tall dudes who can clear the ball on defense and just be offensive. I mean, that's just. It's a weird way of thinking, and I do see your point, Chris. I think it's a very good point. But I mean, in terms of putting together a team,
right? No. Robert is not the right guy to put together teams.
Well, forget him. I'm talking about the entire front office.
No, listen, my colors.
I think those three guys get together and they're like, "Well, what do you want? How do you want to play?
This
is what we have available. This is who we can see on the transfer market. This is what we can get."
Well, it's almost like they built around Glauber. I mean, if they had Federico Higuain, and then they get Glauber. They're like, okay, we're going to be a set piece team.
They're dropping Higuain's potential.
Yes.
To play with this particular player.
And so they're moving with the player signings that they get, which is almost like a stream of consciousness kind of.
You know, it's horse hockey.
It's Dada.
Changes, and that's what makes it a moving
coaching.
Target.
There is an inherent problem with how the teams that the crew has had the last few years have been put together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They go out, they find these fantastic players that are playing in different systems. They are playing very well in those different systems, and they bring them here, and they try to conform them to Bobby's system, which makes them all uncomfortable.
They find a bunch of fantastic players and also Andreas Mendoza.
If we're going to talk about scoring prowess... Yeah, Mendoza was. If he got on his left foot, you knew he was going to score. Period.
Yeah,
I mean, you could almost time
Can
it.
Can I mention something about Mendoza at the moment?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Go ahead.
He was offered to me as a marquee signing for Perth Glory on my Football Manager team.
Wow!
You should have taken.
How much? How much?
$5.
Like £4,500 a week.
No.
Isn't
in
that
real
like
money.
Yeah,
what's real money?
Higuain
what's
is?
That in real money? I have no idea what that is.
Hang on. About $7,000 a week.
Jesus. No. $7,000
a week.
Yeah, I said
no.
That's insane. That's absolutely insane.
But you're all raising very good
hold
points.
Hold on, but to give you a prime example, look at where Mirosevic.
Mm-hmm. Milo von Mirosevic.
Milo.
Exactly. Look at where look at the system where Milo came from, mm-hmm. and how he was utilized in that team, and how he was very successful, and what he came here, and he was asked to do something completely different,
yeah.
to which he was not able. I don't want to say he wasn't able to adjust to, but it not wasn't his speed. Forte.
Exactly.
No. But it isn't this forte. An example of how not to build a soccer team, but how to sell a soccer team?
Well,
because what happens is
correct.
You saw Mirosevic came in here. And he was not going to fit into this program. There's just no question. But when he came in, it was, wow, this guy has some talent like Scalotto. He's kind of Scalotto-ish. He's kind of Scalotto. I mean, this was the buzzword we kept hearing.
Yeah.
When we were in Indy during the draft, before the Glauber signing was coming up, and it was teased to us, like, you guys are going to be really happy. We're getting a guy who's got a pedigree who played for Manchester City. He's kind of a legend.
He's Manchester City.
They said he's Brazilian. They gave us all these clues, and I went home, and I was like, wow, who is this? And I started going through the list of possible candidates who could have fit this. And I'll tell you what.
50.
Let me tell you what I did. I got to Glauber Birdie. I saw his name, and I skipped over him because there was no way that this is the guy that they were teasing. And then it was the guy that they were teasing. I mean, this is a guy who played for Rapid Bucharest, I think, and he had 2 goals in his entire three or four years in Rapid Bucharest.
So basically,
this is the guy that they were signing for $250,000.
You're confirming my theory is that he might have been successful. He might have been a very good defender at Rapid Bucharest. Different system, different style,
right.
different players that he's playing next to.
But that's the thing. They were selling.
I understand.
Well, this is the difference between building a functioning, capable soccer team that competes in Major League Soccer, putting together a little bit of a team with a few names, a few pedigrees, and trying to sell them over and over again to the uneducated Columbus soccer consumer masses.
What would you prefer they do? Not market the club and the players, and just be like,
I would like them to actually build soccer in the city. That's what I would like them to do. I would like them to try and build something that is, if not sustainable, then at least capable of being competitive and attractive to the public. That's what I'd like to see them do.
Well, I would as well. I would as well. One question, and then we're going to start in the Open Cup discussion, and we'll have to push it to the next segment because we're about to hit hard break because we've gone off the rails on a crazy train again. But, Justin, is Glauber Birdie dentising us?
I think no. Mendoza dentist us.
Mendoza dentist us. Okay.
He might still be dentising us, Mendoza. I don't think Glauber. I think Glauber's a good guy. I do.
I think he's a good guy. I'm not saying that. But.
And the one thing I want to get across is I am not happy that he has an ACL tear because that sucks.
Oh no.
And the fact that you know these guys, like I always say this, these guys have a limited amount of time where they can play very well. And this coming in his late 20s is a really bad thing for him.
Yep.
So I hope he gets better, and I hope he comes back and plays for us next year.
Yeah.
But I hope he's better.
Also,
I want to say that the key to this win was the fact that I guaranteed that if we lost, I would get a Montreal tattoo.
Yeah.
You just need to do that.
And everyone looked at me like I was insane.
Well,
yeah.
Yeah. Le Massif Report.
Yeah.
It might be out there.
Lamport Massif. So let's do one thing. We're gonna start on this for just a second, then we're gonna come back in segment three, and we're gonna really talk about it for at least a few minutes. But Chris Edwards, because we've been ignoring you for a little while, and I apologize for that. Did you get a chance to see the Open Cup game, and what were your thoughts on it? If so,
well, I was ready to watch the first one,
yeah.
and then it got delayed, and then it was going to be on at 1 o'clock in the one a.m. Thursday morning. And as much as I am a fan, I'm not prepared to get up at 1 a.m. on Thursday morning to watch the game. And from all reports, it wasn't worth getting up at 1 a.m. on Thursday morning for. So I'm kind of glad I didn't.
That's fair enough. You didn't catch the replay on YouTube?
No, I haven't got around to that yet. I've been job hunting.
All right, fair enough. If anybody in Australia who listens to us wants to hire Chris Edwards, you should. And we'll give you Edster42 is his Twitter handle. I'm just saying. So, well, we're gonna hit a break here real quick.
The ukulele guy is walking by right now.
Oh my god, the ukulele guy!
We gotta go here. Go get him.
Somebody go get the ukulele guy. I want to figure out what.
Oh my god, Jim is actually going.
There's a guy just playing a ukulele.
Yeah.
I love Awesome Town. This is fantastic.
This is the guy that walked in with the fishing pole last year.
No, it's totally different. That guy hasn't been back. That guy scared the crap out of me. All right, so what we're gonna do? We're gonna go ahead and take a break. let's go ahead and we'll recap the Chicago match. We'll talk about that here in just a few minutes. Is Jim really walking across the street?
Ukulele guy disappeared as soon as he appeared.
It's like Brigadoon.
Yeah.
I don't know what the hell's going on. We're going to come back in a few minutes here, and we'll talk about all that sort of stuff. This, my friends, is the Massive Report. Kind of a game I play every week to see how long Sam will play the bump music before he throws something at me. I mean, really, it's kind of a fun game. Why so serious, Sam? Why so serious?
Damn, Sam! Why it's you gotta be so
report?
Cold?
We're live at Hen Docs, joined by Mr. James Bach.
Cheers.
Hey, what's up, buddy?
What's up is I haven't seen the crew play in over a week, so...
Really? I know. You went to the National?
Yeah, I saw Local Natives and the National. It was fantastic
show. Local Natives
show.
Is really good. Yeah.
The second time I've seen Local Natives this year, they are fantastic.
Where are they from?
Boston?
Is
that it? Yeah.
Are they really?
So that's really... That's not... That's kind of a violation of truth in advertising laws.
Really?
I mean, I'm just saying.
I don't know. It was, you know, it was a great gig. It was a beautiful night, but I didn't come to the tailgate.
Yeah, I know. I appreciate that. Yeah. That was pretty. Let's touch on that for half a second. I don't really want to make that a big thing. But
the tailgate was great.
I think I really like the whole unified tailgate thing.
Yes,
I think it's, and I'm not just saying that because it was my idea.
Yes.
But saying that
tailgates
I'm saying that,
without borders.
Well, no, I'm just saying because it really kind of brought everybody together and everybody had a really good time. And I love tailgates without borders. That's going to be the next name for it. I think is
tailgate
I
sans frontières.
Yeah, I was wondering what's the French. How do you say tailgate in French?
You don't, because they don't have a word for it.
Yeah.
None of their cars have trunks.
It's drinking in a parking lot. Whatever that translates to, that's how you say tailgate in French.
Oh, that's smart.
I'm just saying. So let's go on here. I want to talk about the Open Cup match, and since we haven't had you on for the first couple of segments, Jim, I want to kind of start with that, and then we're going to get into.
Since I didn't see the Open Cup,
everybody didn't see it.
I was home. I had my computer open. I was ready to stream it, and then there's no link. So I followed it intently on Twitter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a bummer.
Yeah.
I noticed that you had to refresh a few times.
Oh, okay.
So maybe...
I couldn't get a stream at all.
If I can be your, you know, kind of post after
you
the fact...
You also have to have the internet at
IT
your house.
Guy. Yeah.
I do have the internet at my house, yes.
I think you're lying.
I don't have cable, but I do have the internet.
So, Larry and Justin, let's talk about the Open Cup match for just a couple of seconds, because, dear God, I don't want to talk about it a whole lot. But, Justin, I know you watched it.
Who won?
We did not.
Yeah. Oh.
It wasn't.
Yeah. So the other team won.
You know who won?
Team won.
Okay. The derecho won.
The derecho won.
That's right.
Soccer the derechos always win.
Damn you, derecho!
Damn you all to hell!
You think you can stand up to a derecho, but you can't.
You really can't because it blows you over.
Yeah.
It's very, very strong winds.
I am really disappointed by that.
Yeah.
Because I predicted we were going to win the U.S. Open Cup.
I took the damn day off work. because I knew I took Thursday off work because I knew that the game wasn't going to happen on Wednesday, and I'm like, I need to be able to watch this game because I thought it was going to be something special, and then it wasn't.
I mean, yeah, I mean, you're playing in a tournament, a cup tournament,
yeah,
where it's one and done, for lack of a better phrase.
Yeah,
and you're playing against.
It's a very accurate phrase.
Yeah, you're playing against your most bitter rival.
Yeah,
which I want to bring up a subject here. It seems like if we want to consider Chicago to be our most bitter rival, I think we need to start taking those matches more seriously.
Yeah.
I don't care what format it is, but it seems like for whatever reason, this team, this organization likes to put the words out and say, you know, this boy, we hate Chicago, but for whatever reason, we just don't show up to those matches. Case in point, the last two times we've played Chicago this season.
We don't show up at Toyota Park.
We don't, no.
Yeah,
we haven't won there in how many years? It's been...
We didn't win there in 08.
Yeah, it's been... Yeah. We drew every match in regulation, except for the Eastern Conference Championship against Chicago.
Yeah, it's just a place we don't, for whatever reason. It could be travel. And you know what kind of bothers me about that is, I think somebody let out that they had a bad experience coming back.
Yeah.
And that only makes it worse for the next trip out there. It's like, oh, you know, for crying out loud, we're going up to Chicago.
Yeah.
You know, and everybody's shoulders sort of go down, and it's like, we're not going to win this game.
Yeah.
But
well,
if they want it to be a rivalry, they got to take it seriously when they go up there, because the crew are just getting beat.
The fortunate thing is they don't have to go to the internal tire fire that is Bridgeview until 2014 at this point, unless by some miracle we meet in the playoffs. Which I don't know if that's necessarily a miracle.
No,
I'm just saying
that would be a miracle.
That's the only reason that we would have to play Chicago again is if there's a, because we have two home games against them for the rest of the season, and that's it.
Yeah,
and then we're done.
It's ridiculous that we keep losing to Chicago because it's terrible.
Insanely ridiculous.
I mean, they're terrible, and they haven't been good for a really long time. They haven't been good since Blanco quit.
And this match was a perfect example. I mean, it is a single elimination tournament. It has their founder's name on this thing. It looked like with the players they took, they were looking to take their first team and play their first team. But you know, the with the delay, they decided, oh, we'll put our reserves in there. I kind of wish that they had kept the same mentality and put Higuain in there and played it to win instead of going back to the same lineup, which is essentially the same lineup they played Dayton a few days earlier, which was a tired lineup anyway.
Yeah,
so I'm glad that they played. You know, they did play Grunebaum.
Yeah.
Which I was very nervous about.
Isn't he like their cup... I mean, isn't he their cup keeper anyway?
If they play Hesmer or no Hesmer,
he's their cup keeper.
If they play Lampson in that game, Lampson, he seems like he's going to be a good keeper, but mm-hmm. he has not looked good this year.
Mm-hmm.
They would have lost that game. Grunebaum
One time we've seen him.
I've seen him a few times this year.
Well, no, okay, yeah.
But he's a... Justin's right. I mean, if Lampson was in there this game, it might have been a lot worse than it was.
Yeah. No, I can see that.
Loath as I am to defend Bobby about anything, but actually, I would say that other than hardcore fans like us, nobody really cares about the U.S. Open Cup. And I think that it's pretty excusable that he would not, that in a situation where there was a one-day delay, where we have an important match against the conference leaders in a couple of days, that he would play a weakened team, because I don't think that the league considers the Open Cup to be that important. I don't think the front office is considered to be that important, and so I think it's actually fairly excusable.
Is that kind of a damnation, I guess, of the league more than anything else, or is it the crew? Because it's not considered that important.
Well, as you know, I've been thinking a lot about soccer culture in this country lately.
Yeah.
And I just don't think that other than people who are on this podcast, other than the people who listen to this podcast, people like us, I don't think that we consider cup competitions to be nearly as important as the league.
Yeah.
And because you really kind of have to be a football person to get the idea of a cup as an important thing. And we're not the people...
Thank you so much for calling it football.
Well, sorry.
I do want to ask Chris a question on this real quick before we move on. Does, because I honestly don't know the answer, does Australia have a open cup?
At the moment, we don't have a cup, but it is being worked on. And the fans that I've spoken to have been desperate for one for years and years. And we've got we've had administrators come in the last 12 months that have had the point made clear to them that Australian fans want the Cinderella story that the FA Cup provides.
Yeah.
So they want to see the lower level teams have the chance to take on the higher level teams. So they want a cup system. They love the idea of some lower level team, you know, taking on and defeating a top level team. They love that idea. They don't care that it necessarily wouldn't happen, but they're happy to see it potentially happen. So while so I understand where the point's being made, but I feel that a cup is just as important as the league. It depends on where a particular team wants to focus its attention.
It totally makes sense. So going on from that and going into, because Jim, you actually prepared something for us, which you did the most show prep of the week, so you win a prize.
Oh dear!
I have no idea what prize it is, but you win a prize. But I do want to talk about the about this for a second.
Oh,
here.
Are you talking about the my goals?
Your charts and graphs.
Oh yeah, yeah. This is I want to talk a little bit about goals, and
which is just great for an audio podcast.
Exactly. Well, you know, we could always sort of put them up on some sort of blog.
Can we put them up on the blog? Can we put the charts and graphs up on Massive Report?
Yeah, if you send me the file.
Yeah, yeah. So we'll have that.
Oh,
up.
That's no problem at all. Now, what I there's been a lot of talk lately about, well, we're just not scoring the goals. We get the chances, but we're not scoring the goals. And also, I have a coworker who's a huge Crew fan, and I remember when I remember back in 08 and 09, or actually 07 and 08, he would talk about how Siggy, there was this, like, Siggy, after he was fired from LA, he blogged for a while.
Yeah.
Like Rafa Benitez.
Not under fake Siggy.
Not under fake Siggy.
Yeah, right.
That's
right.
A totally different thing.
And one of the things that he talked about was goals from the midfield.
Yeah.
And he really hammered on that point. And so I thought, I'm a quantitative guy. And so I thought, well, let me look at that. And so I looked at a couple of things. And one of the things I looked at was the inequality of goal scoring in our team from 07 through this season. And there's a thing called the Gini coefficient, and it's usually used to measure income inequality, but I used it to measure goal inequality. And it goes from 0 to 100%. And
G-I-N-I,
yeah. And basically, at zero, everybody's equal, and at 100, one person has either all the money or scored all the goals or whatever. And so in the space of 7 seasons, we have gone from a Gini coefficient of under 50% to a Gini coefficient of over 75%, meaning that in 2008, when we won the cup, when we had the best team that has ever played in this league, we were scoring goals from all over. And this season, we're not.
Yeah.
And I think this is a problem. And then another way I looked at it was I looked at goals from players who are not forwards, the percentage of goals scored by players who are not forwards. And in 2008, more than half the goals we scored that season were from players who played in the midfield or were defenders. This season so far, exactly one-third of our goals are scored from midfielders and defenders.
Do you think that it has anything to do with the fact that in 2007, 2008, there were 14 teams and there was a little more talent to go around, and now that there is 19 teams, they're struggling a little bit? And like Justin likes to say, recently, is that if you want goal scorers, you have to pay for goal scorers. And the talent just isn't there, and so you're getting goals from the Dominico Doros and the Arietas, and they're few and far between, and the other guys just don't have it?
That could certainly be an answer,
yeah.
Except, and admittedly, I only looked at one team. But if you look at this team and you look at the years when Siggy coached us and when you look at the years that Robert coached us, there is a clear difference in the way that we play. Mm-hmm. And that's what the numbers are showing us. The one weird anomaly is last year when Eddie Gavin, who is ostensibly a midfielder, was our co-leading scorer. But other than that, basically, ever since Varzia took over, we get almost all of our goals from forwards. And when Siggy was our coach, we were getting goals from everybody.
It's really interesting when I'm just kind of breaking this down just as we're talking here, but two things. First of all, the least amount of goals, or excuse me, the widest spread of goals by players was in 2008. It was 45.54% or however that's measured. The highest percentage, 77.16, of goals by specific players is this year. And then on the opposite end of that, you have goals from non-forwards, 51.02%, which is the highest, was in 2008. The lowest, 33.33, is currently this year.
Right.
But that does not equate to goals per game.
Right, yeah.
And it does in the sense of the most goals per game in 2008. Everything else, and really the crew, seemed to kind of settle around that 1.33 margin, which is where we're at right now.
Yeah, exactly.
1.63 was 2008, which, honestly...
Well, we scored a lot of goals. I mean, when you have the best team, usually the best team scores a lot of goals.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the things I wanted to sort of compare it to was... I'm a huge old-time NBA basketball fan. I guess it's old-time now. And in the late 70s and early 80s, I loved the Lakers.
Uh-huh.
And this is pre-internet. This is, you know, we had cable, but...
Is it the Minneapolis Lakers?
No, it would not be the Minneapolis Lakers, no.
That was an age joke.
Yeah, I know, yeah. And so one of the things I loved about the Lakers was, because I couldn't watch them every... Yeah, George Mikan, thank you. Was, you know, because I couldn't watch them every day, I would look at my daily paper, and I would just count the number of players for the Lakers who were in double figures every game. And invariably, there would be seven or eight guys on that team that would score in double figures every single game.
Yeah.
And so, you know, so you double-team Kareem or you double-team Magic. Well, you know what? Somebody else is going to come up with the points.
James Worthy
or whoever. And... that's the kind of team that we had in 08. Think of all those great goals that Ekpo scored. Think of all those great goals that Brad Evans scored. Where are those goals now?
Right.
Yeah. Someone would step up.
Well, if you look at the lineup, too, historically with some of these players, and it plays out in your numbers, is how many goals do these players have? When Warzia or whoever's deciding on putting the lineup out there, say Sanchez, O'Rourke, the back line with Williams, Marshall, whoever's back there, and then Adoro. How many goals are possibly in it in a five-game span? Three? Seven? It's not that many. And it shows in your numbers here is that you're only going to get goals from Adoro, maybe Higuain.
And maybe Arrieta. Maybe.
If he's playing.
We have a lot of players on the crew that are kind of playing soccer's equivalent of Club Trillion. I mean, really, where it's just you show up in the minutes played section, and then it's just zeros after that. Mm-hmm.
Right. But
as far as the box screen, I'm not saying it's necessarily their fault.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is that's the reality. That's the reality we're presented with.
But it's probably just because I watched the Philadelphia match this morning.
Oh God, why?
I know.
Why?
There was a moment where.
Honestly, Justin.
I know.
Seriously. You know,
I keep doing this. You know,
there is other stuff to do on the internet, or so I'm told.
Well, not if you're me.
Oh.
I have problems.
Weird.
No, but
that's creepy.
There was a moment where.
The government censors have taken away parts of the internet from you.
There was a moment where, in the match, where. Eric Gehrig was forward, as our center backs are usually, where they usually are. And the ball landed in a place where he could strike the ball and get a good shot on goal. And he did. He put a shot on goal, but it had no pace and it had no bite and there was nothing on it. It was an easy save for McMath. I think here's a situation where in 2008, if that's Gino Padula, or if that's name another one of our back.
Frankie Hadick.
Or even maybe...
Chad Marshall.
Chad Marshall would have probably tried to head the ball.
But he kicked it to his head.
Yes.
But Eric Bruner.
Eric Bruner, yeah.
I mean, it would have been... He would have probably scored. he, or at least put in a shot that would have been more
a challenging shot. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And
Adam Moffat. I mean, Adam Moffat scored maybe one of the best goals the Crew has ever scored.
That is the perfect example.
The Moffat rocket.
And the fact is, I think, I don't know what Adam Moffat's getting paid right now. I'm assuming that it's significantly more than Gehrig just because of his amount of experience. But, I mean, and I think Eric Gehrig's a good player. I'm glad he's on our team, and I want to see him play more. But he's not a goal scorer. I mean, and I don't think that he has quite the capability to do more with the ball than someone who maybe you're paying a little bit more to go and say, look, we need to have professional soccer players who can compose themselves over a ball and put on a challenging shot. And I know I harp on this a lot, but it's just what I see. I see guys who want to do well, and they put out an effort, but capably, they're not talented enough to do that. And it's frustrating because we want our players. We want to say, you know, we got the best players. We've got players who could play for any team in the league, but we just don't.
We have a lot of good players, but we don't have enough good players.
Yeah,
we don't have scorers. I think we have maybe two, three scorers, like guys who, my example, who the ball lands at their feet. They can slow the game down just in that brief half second, just enough to know this is how I strike this ball. This is where I put my foot on this ball to put it on frame, to challenge Zach McMath.
Not that difficult to challenge Zach
McMath. Well, yeah. Wait.
It's not Iker Casillas who's there.
There's a Bob Paisley quote, the former Liverpool manager.
Yeah.
And basically he said, if you're in the box and you've got the ball, put it in the net, and we'll discuss your options later.
That's a good quote to end the segment on. We're going to come back here in the fourth segment, apparently talk about the Chicago game, and at some point maybe get to what you wanted to talk about, Justin.
No.
All right, well, we'll come back and we'll talk about all that. Once again, it's the Massive Report. Report. My name is Matt, joined by the usual gang of idiots. I include myself in that, so it's okay. I'm just saying. I love you all. Coming up, fourth segment here, we're going to do some rapid fire. By the way, live at Hendox. Make sure you come out and join us every single Monday night, 7 o'clock, $2 drafts. It's good times.
There was pizza, too.
There was pizza. That was actually, I want to thank John for that. John Winland is the general manager of the bar, and he bought us pizza and bought us beer tonight, and that makes me love him even more.
He is salt of the earth. He's a fantastic guy.
He's amazing.
And he's got cute kids, too, which I don't know about.
Yeah, I think that's all the wife, because John's kind of weird looking. Yeah. But, I'm just saying. Fortunately, they got her genes. Yeah. That's all I'm saying as far as that goes. So, we're going to do some rapid fire here real quick. Sam, do you got the clock ready?
Yep.
All right.
Give me 1 second here. Yeah,
we're going to give you 1 second here. Not the point of doing rapid fire. The point of doing rapid fire is to make it quick.
Hold on.
There we go. All right. Jim, you had a comment about our interview with Adam Jardy last week.
Yeah. I just wanted to say that I think you maybe softballed him a little bit. He came on and he said that basically his job is to be a reporter.
Yeah.
And I would say that that's probably 75% of his job. Because as best I can tell, he is the only person in the world who is paid by a print publication
By any publication.
By any publication to write exclusively about the Columbus Crew. That being said, he has slightly more responsibility than basically to just mimic whatever the front office and whatever Bob Porzio says. He really should take a little bit more of an editorial role occasionally. And I think he's doing that now, and I applaud him for it. Some friends of mine and I have really been on him about that. And I think that he has a responsibility, given the role that he has, that he might want to be... He might want to take a step back occasionally and say, look, some things are not working. This is what might be needs to be done. And not just parrot whatever the front office tells him. Because basically what he's doing right now, or what he had been doing for a really long time, was just printing press releases.
All right, Larry, next to you, the Crew trade an international spot to FC Dallas for a fourth-round supplemental draft pick. And then Chris Edwards from Australia, you're going to get to follow up on that. Larry, go.
I'll talk real quick Chris can get to this. I think it is big brother, little brother. It is FC Dallas has a chance to win some hardware this year. And, you know, with the L.A. trade that happened today, it proved sort of in a way that an international slot has value. The Crew gave it up for a fourth-round supplemental pick. The fourth round has only existed in Major League Soccer for 2 years. Sean Sloan and Andrew Bulls are the two picks from that. I actually think Sean Sloan's pretty good. That's a topic for another day. But the fourth-round supplemental pick, if you're waiting to the fourth round to fill spots on your roster,
yeah,
that's a problem. The international slot has some volume value. The Crew had three of those. And mm-hmm. they gave up one to FC Dallas. It is Mark McCullers yielding to FC Dallas because clearly they have a signing in mind. So, Chris, I'll let you take over there.
Chris, what do you think?
It's a Bull Toronto signing. It's collusion. If you're going to give away an international spot, I want an international player back. I'm just looking at the Dallas roster now. Eric Astley could have filled that spot for us. Raymond Nunes, you know, just to name a couple off the top of my head, that would have been a much more appropriate trade in my mind.
But Larry, do you think it's collusion?
I think it's tacit collusion, which is it's legal. But yeah, you know, Major League Soccer is an LLC; they can sort of do this kind of thing.
Yeah, and they're single entity.
Yeah, yeah, and it's but it looks really bad, and it puts the Crew in a place where it looks like they're throwing in a towel. Whether McCullers and the rest of the organization wants to not think that.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter. The fact is, they gave up something valuable for nothing.
All right, last question, Justin, for the lightning round. Robert Warzyha pulls one out, wins the game against Montreal. A lot of fan anger, lot of calling for his head. Is this a Band-Aid?
Happy days are here again. I think what happens is this is kind of, we were talking about this earlier today, I think this is kind of the normal cycle for Crew. I don't know, the Crew cycle of depression or cynicism, positivism, optimism, everything. What happens is we start out the season with a lot of hope, like we're going to go all the way, we're going to do all these great things, we're a great team. And then slowly we sort of have our reality checked, right? We come into realizing that we're not the team that we expected. And then people start to get angry. Slowly the anger builds. And then all of a sudden we start calling for people's jobs. And then inevitably something like this happens, where we have a better than expected result. Something happens. A performance comes out. One of our players scores a goal. And you know, everyone
doesn't concede a goal.
It doesn't concede a goal. And we win 1-0 over, or 2-0 over a decent team. And suddenly, the pressure's off.
Well, like, I would like to.
Yeah, I looked back at the archives about fluke victories, and I looked at the EPL. And last season in the EPL, Wigan beat Spurs at White Hart Road, and QPR beat Chelsea at Stamford Bridge. And at the end of the season, both those teams were relegated.
Yeah.
So fluke victories happen. I'm not saying that I'm not happy we won,
right,
but I have my doubts that that's a trend.
Can I say one thing, too? Like,
yeah, yeah.
I would like to say, I would like to eliminate the term dominated from all official Crew.
Oh, my God. Seriously.
websites, podcasts,
TJ, everything. I know you listen. Come
I want
on,
that
dude,
to
seriously.
Go away, and I want there to be. A,
I'd like to second that motion.
I want a new yes. a new rule. If you are a member of the Crew Fun Office, or in other words, paid or employed by the crew, if you use the term "dominated" to describe a crew game, then what needs to happen is you need to be fined. And I would like to promote that to be 0.5% of their total paycheck. I would
we better have won 5-0.
Right.
Yeah. If we win, but if even we win then, 5-0,
no, they have to run 5 laps.
They have to run 5 laps around the field as well
for charity.
Yeah, sure. For charity.
Sure. Donations.
0.5% of their paycheck, and they have to run 5 laps around the field unless we win 5-0.
5-0.
All right. Lightning round over. I want to talk about the Chicago game. It's coming up. It's apparently Red, White, and Crew, which is the annual fireworks show, which that's about all I'm going to talk about the fireworks as far as that goes. What friggin' team are we going to see? And I want to start out with Chris just because we haven't started with him yet. So, Chris, give me your thoughts. What team are we going to see for this this Chicago match?
I'm hoping we see the team that played at the weekend. So obviously we're not going to see Glover because he's done his knee, so that'll help us.
Oh, be nice.
So,
yeah, touche.
Man, well, that
maybe
laugh
he
is...
can have another bench named after him.
Yeah, yeah. Or maybe a massage table.
Yeah.
Yeah, that too. So I'm predicting a 3-1 win, and perhaps the Polish ultras from Section 8 to attempt to set fire to the scoreboard to go with the fireworks.
All right, Larry, your thoughts on the Chicago? We're not doing score predictions yet, but I'll allow it just because you're halfway across the world. Larry,
I'm in the future.
Yeah, you are in the future as well. So you already know what the match what ends. So apparently we win 3-1. That's pretty sweet. So Larry, your thoughts on Saturday's match?
Well, I mean, I don't think the Montreal game changes a whole lot for the Crew. The Chicago Fire and the Columbus Crew are two teams headed in different directions.
Yeah,
I think the Chicago Fire have the ability to get better throughout the end of the year. I think the Crew are going to be about the same.
Yeah.
It's due to they're victims of their own devices. I mean, they can't keep a stable lineup. They don't know where to put players in the right positions and stuff like that. So,
yeah.
But this game might be an exception. But I think Chicago Fire definitely has the ability to beat the Crew this weekend at Crew Stadium. You know, without giving a score prediction, but with Mike McGee, they have a lot of confidence coming in. Bakary Somera,
yeah,
you know, in the back. It's going to be a great game. And you know, again, Chicago was on the way up, and the Crew are just sort of where the Crew are.
It'd be nice if we could sign some Hondurans so Sean Johnson can't stop them. I think that would be just for this match. Just if we can sign just on a 1 week loan, if we can sign a few Hondurans, and then Sean Johnson's like, I don't know how to stop these guys' shots.
Could we just field an entire Honduran team?
The Honduran national team. Could
what
just
are they
sign
doing
them?
Right
could we
now?
Get
yeah.
a loan for them?
Yeah.
For
we only can sign two because we gave up our third international.
Right, yeah. You're really sore about that.
I am, a little bit.
Stop crapping in my sherbet. Jim, what do you think? What do you think is going to go on for this Chicago game?
Well, I think it's really hard to say now because I don't know who's going to work hard and be responsible in practice this week.
All of them.
All of them?
Yeah,
all
just assume that all of them will.
Okay. All of the practices.
All our practice belong to us. God, it's. I'm thinking a 1-1 draw. I mean, you know,
yeah.
I think it's back.
It's a responsible pick. I mean.
Yeah, I'm a pretty dull guy.
Yeah. Oh, God, Smelly had showed up. What's going
cigar.
On here? With
Look
a cigar in his hand.
Wow.
God, that's
enormous.
Kid's
weird. Justin, what do you think?
Okay, here's an opportunity for the U.S. Open Cup to help us.
Yeah.
I think Chicago is taking the U.S.
You're
Open Cup.
You're a flask half full kind of guy.
I am. I think the U.S. Chicago should be looking forward to their U.S. Open Cup match against Orlando City because I know for a fact that Orlando City is putting a lot on that match.
Orlando City is probably going to kick Chicago's ass.
I sure as hell hope so.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I have to kind of put yourself in the position of Frank Klobos. What's your goal now for your season?
Yeah.
Because I don't think that... I think if they get past Orlando City, they have a legitimate shot at getting to the final. Yeah. I mean, they're going to be in a tournament with RSL. Who else is still in it? Charleston Battery, I believe.
No. Carolina Railhawks.
Carolina Railhawks.
Yeah, yeah. Charleston Battery.
RSL. And Portland is still in it, I believe.
Yep.
So I mean, they have a good opportunity, and I think they're going to take that match against Orlando City very seriously. So I think they might overlook their most feared rivals.
Did you do air quotes when you said spheres there?
Yes. I don't know what those mean. Yes. What does that mean?
Yes.
What is this?
Much the way that Manchester United's most feared rivals are Wigan Athletic,
because
it's just up the M42 or whatever.
Right. Natural rivals.
Yes.
So I think that bodes well for us.
The other thing is Chicago does have to play Colorado on the 19th.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. They do have a midweek game, and so that, I think, bodes well for the crew. I think that Chicago, in looking at the U.S. Open Cup and looking at the marketing that they put into the U.S. Open Cup at this point, I think that they may overlook us at this point. I think that, honestly, Mike McGee, who I'm going to go ahead and call Maniac McGee because that was a good book when I was a kid. Looking at that's concerning. Sean Johnson, I really hate his time with the national team, but he's a good keeper, and that's concerning as well. And, just looking at the Chicago team that they have and looking at how bad our game against them was, not for the Open Cup, but the first game that we played in the season, it's concerning. And it's a different team now than what we fielded in Chicago the last time, but we'll see what happens. I mean, it's going to be one of those situations that it might go completely in our favor, but...
I mean, the bottom line is this is two equal teams going at it.
Yeah.
And, that's one of the things that the crew have to look in the mirror on is we are facing a team that is as equal level, and they're, bottom five of the table.
That's the part that's disappointing.
We should be beating the Chicago team. We're not able to say that. Nobody at this table was able to say, hey,
no,
we should beat this team.
No.
But nobody's saying
that. If we would have gone into Bridgeview at the beginning of the season, and we would have stomped the crap out of them when they were as bad as they were, I might have a different opinion at this point, but I just don't.
Yeah.
And it's because I have no idea.
Yeah.
I have no idea what team's going to show up. I have no idea what team is going to go out there and put it all in the field.
Is it a team that can finish a shot? Honestly, I go back to the very beginning of the podcast. I think we've played pretty consistently for the most part. I just don't think that we're playing... We got a good bounce.
We're consistently lukewarm gruel.
Yeah.
Are we able to keep that up, that intensity level that we've had?
The intensity level of lukewarm gruel?
The lukewarm gruel doesn't come till later.
That was fantastic.
the first 20 minutes or so.
You saw the difference, too. When Oduro's goal, or Sanchez's goal, found the back of the net, there was an up. They jumped up.
Yeah.
You could see it in their body language. Compare that to when the ball ricocheted off of Gehrig from Brian Carroll's shot and found the goal, and they just sunk. I mean, it was a... So, yeah, in that regard...
It's too hot and cold. I mean, Chicago, say Mike McGee, is able to get one in the first 25 minutes, do the crew put their heads down and the game over? I mean,
it's questionable.
Yeah.
It's funny because Conrad Rozia scored the go-ahead goal in the Open Cup match.
Yes.
And so they were up 1-0, and they weren't able to... If you watch that second half, I think it was 1-1 at halftime.
Yeah.
So if you watched the second half, you saw how just kind of panicky they were. running around trying to stop, because Chicago was just bringing it in waves.
They had nothing left to lose at that point.
Right, yeah. And we were not. We were like, okay, 1-1 is possible. Let's go to PKs, or penalty kicks. Sorry, Chris.
Thank you.
At the end. And I mean, I think that's an attitude. That's a difference in attitude between these two clubs. That's also reflected in the way that they're doing their off-season moves, to be quite honest.
Yeah.
Or their front office moves, not off-season. Yeah.
All right, so I think we've hit the end of the actual lightning round, which Sam's just signaling me. You should probably play the outro music at this point, because I think... Oh, we got to do score predictions first. I'm sorry. Chris Edwards, we're going to start with you. Your score prediction for the Chicago game?
3-1 to the Crew.
3-1 to the Crew.
Section 8 to set fire to the scoreboard.
Yeah. Is it just Section 8, or do they include their separate but equal Sector Latino as well? That apparently, maybe they also have separate drinking fountains in Chicago because they segregate them to the opposite end of the field.
No, I think it's the Polish components of Section 8 will do.
Fair enough. Okay, I was just curious. I was just curious because...
I would expect that sort of racist comment from a Nazi.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. Just saying. So, Larry, what are your thoughts?
Cool.
To stay on the positive vibes, I think the Crew, if they're able to keep the same lineup with Marshall and Williams at center back, they can win this game 1-0, 2-1, something like that. If they switch it up, it's a draw or a loss.
All right, Jim, what do you think?
Well, I'm sticking with my lukewarm gruel prediction of 1-1 draw.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah,
yeah, that's gross. Yeah. Sam, your thoughts?
Actually, I think it's
going to
be a 0-0 draw.
0-0 draw. Nice. That'll be fun for the fireworks tonight.
Come on out to Crew Stadium.
Let's watch you. Nobody score ever. Llama.
3-1 Chicago.
3-1 Chicago. Wow. I'm going to beat you up in the parking lot later.
The Crew blew their load already.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. Justin.
Well, I'm hearing that there's a rumor that while Section 8 is here in Columbus, that everything is... free at McCusty's Soda Shop this week.
Nice, nice. Right by Wrigley Field. Yeah,
I'm just hearing
it's
this.
It's free if you throw a brick through the window.
It's a
That's
rumor.
What I've heard.
Yeah, I've heard that too. I'm going to say we're going to win 2-1.
Okay, that's fair enough. I'm going to say I'm going to wrap up the prediction segment here and say that I think it's going to be a 2-2 draw. That's my thoughts on this. I don't think Lightning's going to strike twice. But at the same time, I don't think Chicago is going to play that much better than us on the road. So that's my thoughts. For quite honestly, everybody, the cavalcade of thousands that have shown up here at Hendock's Pub, or Adam, one of the two. Well done, Adam. Adam shows up every week, and Adam's friggin' awesome. I just wanted to make sure that was on record. For Chris Lamacchia, for Larry Johnson, for Sam Fahmy, for Jim Bach, Justin Bell, Chris Edwards, live from Australia on Skype. That's pretty freaking awesome. My name is Matt Goshert, once again live from the Hendock's Pub. This has been the Massive Report Podcast. Though no one can go back and make a brand new start, anyone can start from now and make a brand new ending.